on today's episode of the Law of Tech podcast.
Working in law doesn't necessarily mean legal practice. I think there's a kind of assumption, I guess, that if you are on that path, then that is the destination that you have to get to. I think from what I've seen and spoke to people, it kind of felt like putting a square through a circle hole, really. They felt that they needed to get there because that's what almost they felt that they should be doing. I kind of felt the same way, I suppose. I felt that I needed to get to that point. And at the end of the day, when it happened, it was a success. I spent 7 years or something getting there. But in a way, it was also a letdown, because I was at a point where I didn't really know whether that it was actually for me or not. The advice I would give is don't follow a legal career unless you're kind of 110% convinced that it's for you. There are other options. I'd research the other options, the other legal tech options, the future roles that are out there, because some of them might be more suited to you as they were for me.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Law of Tech podcast. My name is Hadassah Drukarc. I am your host, and I'm joined by my wonderful co-host, Marco Mendola, who will give a quick hi from his side as well.
Hey, Hadassah. Hello, everyone. I'm so grateful and happy to be here today.
Now, today's episode will be focused on the question whether we need non-lawyers to boost legal innovation. And this is the third episode of the first sub-series of season 3 of the Law of Tech podcast, which focuses on the question whether we have approached a new era in terms of the intersection between law and technology. And for this, we are joined by Mark May. But before we delve deeper into the topic of this episode, a quick word from our sponsor, Betty Blocks. Are you looking for a way to create solutions that will make legal processes faster, easier, and more efficient? Do you want to offer the best client experience with great digital services? Well, look no further than our sponsor for this episode, Betty Blocks. Rapidly build custom legal tech applications such as legal intake portals, ESG assessments without a single line of code. Start building your own solutions today with Betty Blocks. Now, Mark, I think there's a lot that we can introduce in terms of your experience and background, but we will actually hand the mic to you. So I want to welcome you on the show, of course, and please go ahead and tell a little more about yourself.
Okay, will do. And thanks for having me. So I wear a few different hats. My main hat, as it were, is Industry Solutions Director for Legal at M-Files, where I spend my time doing product marketing, but also R&D. Which is very interesting, and it's a great role in this space. And on the side, I've been doing something else for the last 5 years. So I'm the founder of the Legal Technologist magazine, and I've I keep that going to really get some visibility into the space for legal ops and kind of the good stuff that they're doing.
Super interesting. And I think that you can also, seeing your background, tell a lot about alternative legal careers, which is also something that we would love to focus on a little later on in the episode. And I think you probably, through the Legal Technologist, also see a lot of what's going on outside of your daily activities at work. So I think that's all super interesting.
For sure. I suppose I'm lucky in that the Legal Technologist isn't just kind of UK-based or UK-focused. I've got articles from many of the different parts of the world, so you kind of get a feel for what is out there, the interesting stuff that's happening.
Just to jump in, Mark, can you clarify what's R&D? Because you mentioned that before, and I struggle with acronyms so much. Okay. Can you just explain that to us?
So, like, research and development. So I'm supposed to briefly go into a bit more detail. I spend my time looking at solutions or ways of configuring M-Files and its kind of associated products in a way that best suits legal, so best suits lawyers within in-house or lawyers within private practice. But the interesting thing is kind of understanding the wants and needs and being able to kind of get your hands dirty almost and configure something and create something. That's the fun bit.
I really like the metaphor. That's amazing. Thank you.
I may have missed it at the start. I'm not sure, but what is your, like, can you also tell us more about your background in terms of like what you studied and then moving to this sector? How is that?
Okay. So I've got a varied background. It's funny talking about it on this podcast because I spend my time asking other people about their own journeys into legal tech. But if I'm honest, I didn't do, if I go all the way back, I didn't do so well at school. I spent 4 years in the army as an electronics engineer. Kind of traveled the world a bit, as you do in the army. Spent a couple of years in Germany, for example, although can't speak all that well. And then kind of left the army. I wanted to pursue a career in law. That was one of the interests that I had beforehand. I suppose one of the things that I was definitely better at and more interested in. But I didn't really have the discipline, I'd say, before I joined the army to really pursue things. So I did an Open University course while I was in the army. I used that to get into university as a full-time student. And I spent 3 years at UWE doing my LLB. And I got to the end of that. And it was not a great time, I put it that way. It was the recession was in full swing, and it was difficult really to get a job. So I was looking for paralegal jobs. I was obviously doing my applications to for training contracts and stuff like that. But the point was, you needed a lot of experience for the paralegal roles that I was just trying to break into.
Which is insane, right?
Yeah.
Because like you're like a paralegal role. What, like, I don't understand how you can expect of a just graduated bachelor's student to have that amount of experience to differentiate yourself. That's just my personal opinion.
No, it's true. I suppose in a way it's the law firm's market really at that point in time. There's even more demand than there would be normally, and they can kind of pick and choose, but. I spent probably a couple of years thinking about what I wanted to do, whether I wanted to be a lawyer after all. Spent a bit of time traveling, probably about three quarters of that time traveling, and then come back, did my legal practice course, finished that, then found myself in a role as a paralegal, and then after that in a different firm as a paralegal, and I kind of used the experience that I had to qualify as a lawyer through something called equivalent means. So it's probably one of the early ones, and it's probably the precursor a little bit to the SQE. It's basically the accumulation of a lot of evidence to prove that you have passed aspects of legal practice and passed like the practice skills standards, I think it was at the time. It was quite an arduous process. I'd say it was probably 50-60 page application that I had to put in, and I don't know, I had like kind of 8 to 10 references or something I put in.
Wow.
So I had to kind of go all out a little bit. So it isn't as easy as people think it is, and people tend to call it like the paralegal shortcut, which it is not.
It's extremely difficult indeed. I've heard of it as well. And also, Adessa, something that I think it's interesting to discuss is there are different ways of qualify as a lawyer, not just, you know, in your own country, but you need to consider that now the market is so much globalized and diverse that there are tons of different ways of qualifying as a lawyer in different countries, not just in Europe, but like even worldwide. So, there's another huge discussion about qualifying that I don't want to even touch. But in terms of alternative careers, which is something that, you know, at the law of tech, we are extremely interested about. It's your story, Mark, it's amazing. It's unique because you really, really were like first very brave, and then you had the, you wanted to really test it yourself and understand starting traveling and pursue your own path, which is, I think, it's admirable. It's amazing.
I haven't even got to the good stuff yet.
I was just going to ask, how did you get from there to here?
Basically, at the point of qualification, I found that really I wasn't so interested in litigation anymore. So I was doing professional negligence. I guess I'm sorry for the listeners that are prof neg lawyers out there. But I kind of found that it wasn't really for me. And it just happened to be that I fell into a project rolling out document automation. So... It's the second one, actually. So the first one kind of relied on lawyers to be the ones that actually automate the documents. And that didn't work so well for capacity reasons. They just didn't want to pick it up. But the second one kind of relied on the fact that I was the kind of single point of contact. I was the person that would handle the queries, kind of automate on their behalf, kind of gather their requirements and be able to kind of turn around their needs and basically get them to the point where they're internally more efficient by automating stuff. So I've probably spent like a couple of years trying to roll it out across that particular firm. I think I probably got as far as I could with it. There were challenges, as anybody that does change management in some form or rolling out a new technology finds. But at the end of that, I then kind of found myself in consultancy somebody that was doing document automation. There weren't all that many of us at the time. This wasn't that long ago, but there I kind of found myself as almost like an expert in a particular tool that I could kind of then use and consult on elsewhere or do the automation of other firms, documents and et cetera. And that journey then led me down the CLM path as a kind of natural progression. So moving from having kind of document by document to having both the templates, like automating the templates and the workflow that surrounds the templates. So I was doing that sort of work for fairly well-known brands, and it was interesting. It was quite intense, but it was interesting. It was good to see how people thought about legal tech, kind of the good stuff that they were thinking about, the ideas. It was really good to do, but in the end, kind of took a step back a little bit. I kind of wanted a new challenge. I'd spent probably a couple of years building up a team remotely and internationally, which kind of took its toll, I suppose. So then I found myself with Ment, a no-code document automation tool, which was at the time kind of in the process of scaling up. They were part of the curve that was looking at no code as a kind of a solid tool in which it could easily scale because people didn't have to have the skills, technical skills. Yeah. And probably within 7 months of me being there, it then got acquired by M-Files. And then I've now found myself in M-Files with a broader portfolio of looking at legal more broadly and across their products. So it's been a bit of a journey, fun, definitely at times, and definitely challenging at times, but it's
rewarding.
Yeah, for sure, but not planned. And I think that's the thing with people in legal ops these days. There's a certain lack of planning. They kind of, some of the earlier ones have kind of fell into it. And I suppose now my personal interest is in kind of defining the legal ops career path a little bit more, so people can start at the beginning and kind of get all the way to the end in their kind of working lives, rather than kind of having to kind of fall into it.
Mm-hmm. You said that people tend to fall into legal ops. You want to change that to a certain extent. Where do you think we should start defining paths without defining too much, like you oftentimes see in legal education, I would say?
So I suppose if I take myself back to when I was doing my law degree, and for me, it seemed like there were two options as a result of that degree, which was either be a solicitor or be a barrister. And there wasn't mm-hmm. really anything else, it seemed, that you could do in law with it. I suppose at that point in time, when you're going through a theoretical law degree, that there isn't really, it didn't, at least not that university, it didn't seem like there was a view on kind of what other parts of a law firm you could possibly work in, that you could use your kind of analytical skills for other parts of supporting lawyers, but not necessarily practice law. But clearly there's a pull to law, right? And the pull is clearly the big bucks that you get from it. So having an alternate route always will have its challenges in competing against something that seems kind of significantly more lucrative. But from my own podcast and speaking to people, I think people found that they were kind of moving towards the lawyer route. Like they were on the track, but then found that it just wasn't really for them, and they didn't really know what to do until something ultimately fell into their lap a little bit later when they were in working in a law firm or working in-house. So I kind of imagine that they lost a bit of time, I suspect, in their career journey, where they weren't focusing on something that they wanted where they wanted to get to, because really they didn't know that it existed. So if I kind of answer your question, I kind of imagine that law firms should really be, universities should be looking at these, the kind of different roles that are out there. And they are future roles, roles of the future, probably contained within like Susskind's books. So they need to cater for these people that they're in effect translators. So they should be able to understand law, like how it works, kind of how lawyers work, but equally understand technology and the more kind of IT technical skills, project change management, the kind of analysis of different products, and see how they fit best, and problem solving. So I suppose I imagine that law firms, universities should teach people that and get them to that.
Yeah, it can be challenging, right? Because what you oftentimes see, and maybe I'm very much generalizing, so I don't mean to offend anyone with this, but the professors that teach in law school are oftentimes either academics mm-hmm. or they are lawyers. So they come from the traditional roots.
Such a great point. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I'll go on, Mark.
That is a good point, because that is also something that somebody had said before as a way of kind of almost giving back, I suppose. Like people that are already within the industry, within legal ops, kind of come back to university. I got it right that time.
They're striking your ass.
to tell people about it. So I suppose it's the marketing, the role kind of back. And I think some people probably do, but I suspect it should be done more. To get more visibility.
You also mentioned different skills, especially technical skills that are really required in addition to legal knowledge and legal skills. Now, of course, like the topic of the episode that we're talking about is whether we need non-lawyers or I'll just make an addition here by lawyers with technical knowledge to boost legal innovation. I'm curious to know from you in more depth, maybe. You mentioned a couple of skills just before, but what technical knowledge do you really believe that legal professionals should have in this day and age to really foster legal innovation? And secondly, what is the role of non-lawyers in this context?
Okay, I'll start by saying that there'll be some people raging at this point at the
we like
of
this
called non-lawyers.
Please go. Yeah.
But I get your point. Those that are ultimately not practicing the law, I suppose. Taking the lawyer one first, I think their focus is and should be on the practice of law, because their main focus is clearly legal work product, right? So it's kind of taking in those instructions or those requirements when it comes down to it, and they're outputting something, advice or a document or kind of something else. But the how that process happens, they don't need to be fully involved with everything, because there will be other people, so let's say legal ops people or legal project managers, for example, that are able to assist them in kind of making the overall process more efficient with specialists. So I would say that that said, this should definitely be like a continuous improvement, especially with the way that they use day-to-day tools. So, but your second point about non-lawyers, so I will probably refer to them as legal ops people. So they are required. So if you're driving an innovation agenda, those people that can, like I said earlier, kind of translate between the legal and the technical, and kind of provide kind of both parties, let's say IT on one hand and lawyers on the other, with a view on what the problem is and how that problem can be solved, and the analysis required to understand what product will suit the needs of the person that has the problem and the organization as a whole. I mean, those skills are valuable commercially. Kind of within the organization, you're going to get your benefits from better service. You're going to have quicker matters. You're hopefully happier lawyers that are not doing kind of mundane tasks. But when it comes down to it, they can dip into different teams. They can kind of do this continuous improvement where they're looking at this process or that process, kind of making it more efficient with the knowledge that they have. Based on what they've seen or kind of the collaborations that they've had or things like that. And again, commercially, they're able to kind of build stronger relationships with clients, with tools that are now out there for more collaborative purposes.
Now, you also mentioned the legal technologist. Definitely would love to hear more about what exactly you do with a legal technologist, what kind of topics you discuss, and also maybe some of the key points that you would take away from all the work you've done so far and the people you've spoken to in terms of alternative legal careers, in terms of what's possible in the field and where we're heading maybe also.
Okay, so I'd say that the legal technologist was a passion project. But I mean, there have definitely been times when it's been too much, especially kind of around my day job and things like that. But overall, it's been a fun thing to create and maintain and kind of see how it's grown over time. So I suppose if I remember back, I was trying to roll out document automation at that firm. I kind of got the impression that people didn't really understand what I did, I suppose, as a sort of early legal ops person. And they didn't really understand how legal tech was used in practice, kind of what the benefits were and kind of generally how the market was using it. And I think that's probably the thing that is difficult when you're trying to roll something out, is the change management. Why should people change the way that they do what they do? And it normally requires some element of, oh, this other person is doing it, and this competitor firm is doing it. So really, you should be doing it. And that's the kind of some of the reasons why I started it in the first place. So I started the first one, I think, had a lot of my own articles in there, and a few other kind of trendsetters, mm-hmm. I suppose, looking back, that were happy to get involved. But over time, the following kind of grew, and people kind of volunteered their articles more and more. The reach got bigger. The places where I got articles from kind of spread and spread. So you really got a sense of the diversity of this area.
No.
That it wasn't just limited to London, maybe, or UK or US, or the kind of mature markets, but that it was really happening everywhere to a greater or lesser extent.
Yeah.
And I guess over time, it went from, I suppose, almost being newsletter-esque to something that is overall a little bit more professional.
Not a real proper magazine. Yeah, yeah. You're definitely downplaying that there.
but it took a long time. I spent a long time kind of refining things in Canva, only to then kind of get it professionally done in the end. Wow. and using like the component pieces of it. But
yeah,
it's been a steep learning curve. Again, it's kind of all about people. And the things that I enjoy best is probably seeing people's career stories and how they have got to the point that they are. And that's kind of the reason why I started the podcast not that long ago, my own one. But it was just to reflect in a different way, in a different medium, kind of how people have made it, how other people can make it in the same way. I suppose pulling down that ladder and making sure that people were able to kind of step up. I think, especially in this space, dare I say it, a lot of content out there is very technology focused, mm-hmm. maybe not so human focused, put it that way. So it's I don't know. It's nice talking about people, how people have got to where they are, kind of their journeys. The focus on the people doing it, that's the fun bit.
I can completely imagine. And if you would advise students now or young professionals now who are trying to find out how or what options are out there in terms of alternative careers, in terms of legal ops, if you look at all the people that you've had in the legal technologists, people you've spoken to, the pieces that you've read from them, the discussions that you've had, what are some key points of advice that you would give young professionals in the field?
I guess the funny thing is that on my podcast episodes, this is the last question also, and I've had to think about what my advice would be. So
we still have some juicy things to go, two questions more, so I'm not sure if they're going to be any better, but go ahead.
What advice would I give? I suppose the first thing is that working in law doesn't necessarily mean legal practice. I think there's a kind of not illusion, but like assumption, I guess, that if you are on that path, then that is the journey that's the destination that you have to get to. I think from what I've seen and spoke to people, it kind of felt like putting a square through a circle hole, really. They felt that they needed to get there because that's what almost they felt that they should be doing. They should be kind of aspiring to be like that. But if I look back, I kind of felt the same way, I suppose. I felt that I needed to get to that point. And at the end of the day, when it happened, it was a success. I spent 7 years or something getting there. But in a way, it was also a letdown because I was at a point where I didn't really know whether that it was actually for me or not. And it took the opportunity to do something more technical. I suppose going back to something more technical after the army experience, to find something that I enjoyed again. So I suppose the advice I would give is, don't follow a legal career unless you're kind of 110% convinced that it's for you. There are other options. I'd research the other options, the other legal tech options, the future roles that are out there, because some of them might be more suited to you, as they were for me.
Some very genuine and very honest advice, I would say. So thank you for that advice. And Marco, if you want to do this, Marco, we have a tradition on the show to ask our guest a question. In this case, there are two, but let's see how we go about it. From our previous guest, which was in the previous episode, Alexandra Vazhevchuk, who spoke to us about legal innovation, what's going on in the field, and what it really means to innovate in the legal space. So we asked her if she has questions for, or a question to our next guest on the show. I don't know if you want to do the honors, Marco.
Okay,
Marco.
So go for it. Hi, Alexandra. We're going to do our best to replicate your answer. And so, Mark, lucky you have Alexandra's question, and the question is twofold. So the first point is, if you met a genie and had three wishes, what would you change in the legal profession right now? So something that can happen overnight.
I think I had... I kind of got a get out of jail.
A monopoly because, one, yeah.
Because of kind of what I was talking about earlier about having that alternate career, like having law schools tomorrow, pushing the agenda for legal ops career, alternate careers in law. And I don't think it would take a genie to do it. I think it is getting there, but it needs to become less ancillary, maybe less kind of master's programmed and more kind of this is the way that practice is going to be done, and these are the skills that you need if you're kind of getting there. So I guess my one wish.
So you're very, very modest. One wish only. That's good. All right. We accept it anyway. We accept it.
Okay. I'll bank the other two.
You bank the other two.
For later.
And I leave last question to Adasa, please. Come on.
To be fair, I think you really have nailed answering Alexandra's questions without even knowing what they were. So we can still ask them or ask this one, see what your response is, but I'm pretty sure that I know what you're going to say. So the final question that we have from Alexandra, and by which we'll also wrap up the show, is what types of professionals would the legal sector benefit from most? What skills are we missing most? And can those be addressed through education of lawyers, or is there an argument to be made that we need to outsource them to others?
Okay.
I feel like we've touched upon this.
Yeah,
seems familiar.
We have. So lucky with this one as well. So I guess in summary, what types of professionals? Kind of legal ops more broadly covers a number of different people in a number of different roles that kind of stretches from like legal project management, e-discovery, document automation, CLM, matter management, all those people that are there, the kind of the glue that keeps the law machine running and ticking over, right? So while I suppose the lawyers steer the ship and they're doing the work, clearly these are the people that are making sure things happen quickly and profitably, I suppose. Again, I probably draw back to the kind of niche skill of being that translator between one and the other. I think it takes a while to hone that, and I don't think we covered it, but it's the age-old argument of, or age-old debate, I suppose, of whether you have somebody that understands law and you kind of teach them the technical skills, or whether you have a technical person that then is able to kind of learn how lawyers work, or kind of how they do their day-to-day work. So the skills is an interesting one. Maybe that's the one that I pass forward, in fact.
I love how we ended with that as well. And also the question that you you kind of rose in answering this last question, we should definitely take with us to a next episode. Thank you so much for all of your input. I also love how, even though we've asked some of the same questions a couple of times, you always have a somewhat more elaborate answer and a somewhat new touch to the question or to answering the question. So thank you so much for taking your time to join us for the episode, and I'm looking forward to seeing the responses.
Thanks so much, Mark. No problem. Thanks so much for being here. A pleasure.
Thanks both. Yeah, it was really enjoyable, and I do enjoy talking about legal tech and legal ops, as you might have guessed.
Thank you so much for tuning in to the Law of Tech podcast. If you want to make sure you keep up to date with the show and never miss out on an episode, be sure to subscribe on your podcast platform of choice and follow the Law of Tech on social media. If you enjoyed the show, please give it a rating or review, as it helps others discover the show. And don't forget to share it with your network. For now, have a great day, and I'll see you in the next episode of the Law of Tech podcast.